Chapter 13. Celebrating a New Year. As Sam and Violet drove away from the imposing facilities of the Calvary Christian Center, a sense of relief washed over them, as the requirements of their workday were complete. Traveling back west on Interstate 10, they both sat quietly, listening only to the GPS providing navigation directions. As good luck would have it, the hotel was not far from the interstate exit, and it was, like Cheng said, about a 15-minute drive. As they pulled into the parking lot, they were relieved to find plenty of available spaces. Their rooms, conveniently located on the lower floor, were only a few doors apart, offering a sense of security and proximity. Sam expertly maneuvered the ambulance into a parking spot on the far side of the lot. Parking away from the building was a kind of nonverbal signal to others that they were not there on official business. "Let's check these rooms out," Sam said, as he handed Violet her room key. "I want to make sure everything is in order before we relax." Violet commented, "It says no smoking on the doors, but I sure hope it doesn't smell like smoke anyway." Violet was easily annoyed by hotel rooms that smell like cigarettes. As they entered their respective rooms, a wave of relief washed over them. The accommodations were clean, modern, and inviting, offering a much-needed time out from the day's travel. Violet's attention was immediately drawn to the television, a beacon of potential entertainment in the quiet solitude of her room. To her delight, the TV boasted a wide array of channels, promising hours of distraction. With a sense of satisfaction, she moved to the small desk, eager to set up her laptop, finding she was easily able to connect to the hotel's Wi-Fi. Just then, there was a knock on Violet's door. When she opened the door, it was Sam. Sam asked, "How is your room? Smell any smoke?" Sam walked in and looked around. "Your room looks the same as my room." Violet nodded in agreement. "I imagine most of the rooms are the same. Mine's perfect," she replied. "No lingering smells, and the TV works great with a lot of channels." A comfortable silence settled over the room as they both absorbed their surroundings. Breaking the silence, Sam said, "I know it's only 5:30, but I'm starting to get hungry." Patting his stomach, he asked, "Are you down for some dinner at that Mexican place across the street?" Violet answered, "Yes, I would definitely be down for some dinner." Then she added, "I was thinking, we came all this way to Houston, perhaps we could check out one of the fireworks displays at midnight. I know we have to be up early. But we could go eat dinner, then come back to our rooms and rest for a while. Then later, catch a rideshare to see a fireworks display." Sam replied, nodding his head, "Yeah, sounds like a great plan, I'm in." Violet added, "I know that the Houston area has several different locations for fireworks. After we get back from dinner, I could go online with my laptop and research where fireworks are being launched." Sam gave a thumbs up and said, "Let's get out of these uniforms and put on some street clothes. We'll plan on heading over to the restaurant in about 20 minutes. "Okay," Violet answered, "I'll be ready when you are." Then Sam left to get ready. The entire city of Houston buzzed with the positive excitement and energy of New Year's Eve. The hotel, the restaurant, and even the Calvary Christian Center, like countless other venues across the city, were immersed in the upcoming festivities. Each passing moment was meticulously planned, a carefully orchestrated series of events unfolding as expected. Yet, glimmering in the underworld, a sinister plot was taking shape, a dramatic contrast to the city's holiday spirit. A sinister plot, yet to reveal itself. History has a chilling habit of repeating itself. Time and again, acts of terror have struck, and always without warning, their devastating impact reverberating through communities and nations. The element of surprise is a hallmark of such attacks, a cruel twist of fate that leaves victims and survivors alike reeling from the shock. Once unleashed, the consequences of these diabolical acts are irreversible, casting long shadows of pain and suffering for years to come. Tonight, the city of Houston will transform into a bustling metropolis of celebration, as tens of thousands of people congregate at various venues, ushering in the new year. Undoubtedly, the city has bolstered security measures in anticipation of the large crowds. However, the sheer number and size of potential targets raises concerns about the feasibility of complete protection. This is especially true when facing synchronized and well-planned attacks from predators also planning to die. As the time neared 10 p.m., Sam and Violet were just arriving at the Houston Veteran Memorial Park. As they got out of the car, they each had an umbrella chair that they had purchased near the hotel. The sprawling park, illuminated by countless twinkling lights, promised an evening of entertainment and excitement. With its reputation for hosting one of Houston's premier New Year's Eve fireworks displays, the park had drawn a massive crowd, transforming the expansive green space into a vibrant and bustling city of celebration. Sam turned to Violet, his voice filled with both caution and the desire to have some fun. "Like we discussed earlier," he began, "let's explore the area, but if either of us feels uneasy or unsafe, we head back to the hotel without hesitation." Violet nodded in agreement, her eyes scanning the crowd. The festive atmosphere was dampened somewhat by the imposing presence of concrete barriers, strategically placed to cordon off and protect the crowd. These formidable structures effectively prevented vehicular access to the densely populated areas. Collectively, they created a secure perimeter around the event. A single heavily guarded entry point, that could be traversed only by foot traffic, served as the sole access to these protected zones. In addition, a large security team was checking all coolers, bags and backpacks, and coats brought in by the public. The heightened security measures were a proactive reminder of potential threats, the kind of threats that had plagued San Antonio this past week. The Veteran Memorial Park, a sprawling green oasis in the heart of the city, was renowned for its ability to accommodate large-scale events. Violet, whose meticulous research had uncovered the park's reputation for hosting Houston's premier New Year's Eve fireworks display. As veterans themselves, both Sam and Violet held a deep-rooted respect for the park's dedication to honoring those who served. The park hosted a captivating museum, showcasing countless artifacts, many of them dating back to the Revolutionary War. However, the centerpiece of the park was an impressive collection of large military equipment, including helicopters, tanks, fighter jets, and artillery cannons. The park's artifacts served as a powerful reminder of technological achievements and the sacrifices made by those who served. Beyond its historical significance, the park was also home to a modest nature preserve. As they made their way into the park, the huge scale of the gathering became apparent. A sea of people stretched out before them, a diverse crowd from all walks of life. Families and friends mingled amidst the festive atmosphere, their faces illuminated by twinkling lights. Many of the lights were being worn by a lot of those in attendance. Tens of thousands of people had gathered here to celebrate the start of a new year, their festive enthusiasm filled the air. A myriad of vendors had set up shop, offering everything from brightly colored t-shirts to glowing light-up hats. Food trucks were lined up to form a rectangular-shaped food court, surrounding a large cluster of picnic tables, their enticing aromas mingling with the sounds of laughter and conversation. A large stage hosted a live band that pumped out energetic tunes, adding to the vibrant atmosphere. "This New Year's Eve party is incredible," Violet exclaimed, her eyes wide with wonder. "I can already tell this is going to be an amazing night." Sam couldn't agree more, saying, "This place is way better than Times Square." As he scanned the crowd, he remarked, "Look at all the people having a great time. There's people here of every age, whole families. This is definitely the place to be." Carrying their chairs, Sam and Violet took their time, casually strolling through the celebration, surveying all the activities, and simply taking in the scenery. The energy of the crowd was infectious, and the anticipation of the fireworks display added an extra layer of excitement, yet to come. "Finally," Sam admitted, "I know we ate earlier, but I'm hungry again." With a tilt of his head, he added, "I saw a food truck over there that had some amazing-looking barbecue. Are you hungry?" Violet replied, "Not really." Pointing toward a group of vendors, she suggested, "I saw a vendor over by the helicopter. They look like they have a lot of good-looking light-up hats. How about you go get something to eat, and I'll go do a little shopping, and we'll meet back here in 30 minutes.
"Sounds perfect," replied Sam. Then he pointed at the ground, "I'll meet you right here, in say, 45 minutes. With a shared smile, they split up and went on their individual quests. Now without Sam by her side, as Violet navigated through the bustling crowd, a sense of unease gradually began to creep into her consciousness. The overwhelming sea of people, coupled with the heightened awareness of her surroundings, triggered a surge of paranoia. Her gaze began darting from person to person, scanning the crowd for any potential threat. A fleeting moment of fear gripped her, as she fixated on a group of strangers, their actions seeming oddly suspicious in her heightened state of anxiety. Then, a heartwarming sight caught her attention. Several families with young children stood out amidst the chaos, their laughter and play creating a small oasis of happiness. Adorned with glowing hats and necklaces, they seemed oblivious to the world around them. Their innocence, a clear contrast to Violet's growing apprehension. For the children, tonight's fun will likely be a great memory that will last a lifetime. The image of their carefree enjoyment served as a much-needed reminder for Violet to let go of her fears. Determined to regain control of her emotions, Violet made a conscious decision to focus on the positive. With renewed purpose, she approached the hat vendor, her attention drawn to the dazzling array of headwear. The vendor had clearly spared no expense in creating a truly festive selection. As she browsed through the colorful options, her mind gradually shifted away from her anxieties. The simple act of choosing a hat provided a welcome distraction, allowing her to momentarily forget her fears. Finally, her eyes landed on the perfect hat, a dazzling creation adorned with countless twinkling lights. The price tag was steep, but the sheer joy it promised outweighed the cost. A mischievous grin spread across her face, as she imagined Sam's reaction to such an extravagant purchase. Eventually, Sam emerged from the food court battleground victorious, his stomach pleasantly full and carrying two bottles of water, one to share with Violet. Having arrived at their rendezvous point a few minutes early, he just hung loose and soaked in the vibrant atmosphere of the festival, just watching the people. As he scanned the crowd, his attention was drawn to a particularly dazzling spectacle off in the distance, a person adorned with a light-up headpiece that seemed to defy description, and the lights were walking his way. As the person came close, Sam realized with astonishment that it was Violet, transformed into a radiant extravaganza of festive attire. The headdress, a sparkling cascade of feathers and lights, was a sight to behold. "Wow," he exclaimed, his voice filled with genuine awe. "That is the most incredible hat I've ever seen. Where did you find it? Or maybe I should ask, how much did it cost?" Violet twirled gracefully, allowing Sam a full view of her extraordinary headpiece. "Never mind the price," she laughed, her eyes sparkling with amusement. "It was love at first sight, and I had to have it." Violet tossed Sam a light-up necklace. "Here, put that on. I can't be seen hanging out with somebody that's not lit up." Violet held up a large bag of kettle corn, showing it to Sam. She said, "I can't pass up a good bag of kettle corn." She shook her head, showing off her well-lit adornment, saying, "By the way, it's not a hat. It's an Indian headdress." Sam put the necklace on and admired his own glowing lights. "Cool," he said with a smile. Sam couldn't resist the urge to capture this unforgettable moment on camera. "Hold on," he said to Violet, pulling out his phone. "I have to get a picture of this. Put your chair and popcorn down." Violet struck a series of playful poses, with her laughter mingling with the music and the general hubbub of the crowd. "Let me return the favor," Violet said, taking the phone from Sam's hands. She snapped a few photos of him, her fingers dancing across the touchscreen. "You're officially documented," she declared, handing the phone back. "Be sure to send me those photos." Sam looked at his watch, and the arrival of the new year was getting close. "We should find a good spot to watch the fireworks," Sam suggested, a sense of excitement building within him. "Let's set up over there, near the entrance, so we can make a quick exit when it's over." Violet replied, "That looks like a really good spot to me, and don't worry," she added, "I'll share my popcorn." Sam raised his two bottles of water in the air and declared, "I got us something to drink to go with the popcorn." Sam and Violet settled into their chairs, where they sat comfortably awaiting the fireworks display. Violet draped her stunning headdress over the back of her chair, a testament to the evening's enchantment. Passing the bag between them, they shared the kettle corn, the salty sweet crunch providing a taste bud stimulation, adding to the flashy excitement of the celebration. As they relaxed and enjoyed the festive atmosphere, a group of teenage girls approached, their eyes drawn to Violet's extraordinary headpiece. One of them said, "Wow, I think that's the coolest hat here." Her voice filled with admiration. "It's the prettiest one we've seen all night." Violet beamed with pride, her spirits lifted by the unexpected compliment. However, as the minutes ticked by, a shadow of sadness began to creep into Violet's behavior. Previously bright and cheerful, her expression had taken a somber turn. As Sam handed the kettle corn bag back to Violet, he noticed a solitary tear escape Violet's eye. Sam, ever observant, noticed the unhappy shift in her expression. "Is everything okay?" he asked, his voice filled with concern. Violet quickly wiped away the tear, her cheeks flushing with embarrassment. "It's nothing," she insisted, her voice trembling slightly as she looked away from Sam. She didn't want to dampen Sam's enjoyment of the evening with her personal sorrows. Sam's concern deepened. "Violet, I can tell something is wrong," he said gently, placing a comforting hand on her shoulder. "Don't be afraid to talk to me, I've got your back." Violet gazed down at her wedding ring as she gently fondled it. Then she looked over at Sam. With a distressed look on her face, she said, "This is the first time I've been to a New Year's Eve event since my husband died." Just speaking those words seemed to upset her even more as she quickly turned her head away, attempting to hide her tears. Sam squeezed her shoulder gently, offering silent comfort. "I'm so sorry, Violet," he said, his voice filled with empathy. "I know this must be incredibly difficult for you. But I also know that John would want you to enjoy yourself tonight. He would want you to be here, celebrating the beginning of a new year, right?" Violet nodded, her eyes still glistening with unshed tears. "You're right," she said, her voice gaining strength. "He would definitely want me to be here. He loved going to see the fireworks." Just then, the countdown began, each number echoing through the crowd like a heartbeat. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then, cheers filled the air as the clock struck midnight. A colossal digital display, positioned prominently above the stage, announced the birth of a new year in blazing lights. The crowd erupted in a frenzy of celebration, their cheers and whistles blending with the chaotic symphony of honking horns. Amidst the chaos, Sam stood tall, his arms raised in celebration as he joined in the collective outpouring of fun. For Violet, however, the moment was tinged with bittersweet nostalgia. As she stared into the sky, her mind drifted back to a time, to a precious moment when she had shared this special occasion with her beloved husband, John. The memory of their first New Year's Eve kiss, a tender moment frozen in time, brought a confused smile to her lips. As the fireworks exploded in a dazzling display overhead, she found herself caught in a heartfelt interplay of past and present, joy and sorrow. 5 years earlier, Violet found herself newly stationed at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, a city that promised a dynamic blend of military life and civilian adventure. A lifelong firearms enthusiast and former president of her high school shooting club, Violet was eager to explore the local shooting scene. Her research led her to the San Antonio Rifle and Pistol Club, a renowned establishment with a reputation for fostering competitive shooting. Shooting steel is a facet of the sport that particularly appealed to Violet, so she came up with a plan to investigate the club further. Luckily, Violet was fortunate to have already made friends with fellow airman, Lisa Bowman, a passionate competitive shooter and a club member. Lisa, tempting Violet to experience the club firsthand, invited her for an adventure that included target practice and a steel shooting class. The San Antonio Rifle and Pistol Club was a sprawling outdoor complex, located on the outskirts of the city. The expansive facility catered to a diverse range of shooting enthusiasts, from pistol marksmanship to long-range rifle precision, and the club boasted a thriving membership. The club's calendar was brimming with competitive events, a testament to its popularity among the local shooting community. Their shooting excursion was on a Saturday that also coincided with New Year's Eve morning, a time when many firearms enthusiasts sought to indulge their passion. Despite the holiday, the range was bustling with activity, a testament to the enduring appeal of firearms among those who shared this passion. The rhythmic cadence of gunfire filled the air, a torrent of controlled explosions, echoing the excitement of the upcoming celebrations later that night. Both Lisa and Violet were in uniform, and as the women settled into their respective shooting stations at the pistol target range, Violet carefully removed her firearm from its case. A collective gasp rippled through the surrounding shooters as they caught sight of her weapon. Lisa's eyes widened in astonishment. "Wow," Lisa said loudly, her eyes wide with admiration. "Your gun is absolutely stunning, a work of art." The gun, adorned with exquisite gold-plated accents and accessories, was a testament to its owner's dedication to both functionality and aesthetics. Violet smiled proudly. "I call her Goldie," she replied, stroking the gun's sleek surface as if it were a living creature. "She's my go-to for steel shooting. She started off as a Ruger Mark IV, it's a 9mm, then over time, I added a few modifications." The affection in her eyes and voice was evident, revealing a deep bond between the woman and her weapon. Upon seeing Violet's gun, Lisa's expectation for Violet's shooting expertise grew exponentially. It was clear that her friend probably possessed more shooting skill than she originally thought. Lisa and Violet finished shooting their first magazine at about the same time. Lisa looked over at Violet's target, and based on the hole pattern on Violet's target, at first she thought Violet had completely missed her target a lot. Then she thought, nobody with a gun like Goldie is going to shoot that bad, so she took a closer look. "Wow," she said softly. Almost all of Violet's shots were within the bullseye, and the rest of her pattern was remarkably tight, within the area close to the bullseye. While Lisa's shots were very competent with an occasional bullseye, Violet's performance continued to be absolutely astounding. As they continued, magazine after magazine, Violet's bullets found their mark with uncanny precision, drawing the attention of other shooters at the range. Word of Violet's exceptional marksmanship spread among the other shooters at the pistol range, and a small crowd began to gather. Each time she reloaded, the spectators would exchange impressed glances, their conversations of admiration growing louder with each successive bullseye on multiple targets, and with no shot missing the bullseye by much. Violet, initially flattered by the attention, remained focused on her targets, her demeanor a perfect blend of confidence and humility. When it was time to pack up, a sense of accomplishment filled both women. Lisa, though proud of her own performance, couldn't help but feel a profound respect for Violet's talent. "I've never seen anyone shoot that accurate," Lisa said, her voice filled with admiration. "Your precision is amazing." Violet accepted the compliment graciously, saying with a smile, "Well, when you've trained as much as I have, you get pretty good." Her modesty attempting to conceal her exceptional talent. "But thank you for the kind words." With their equipment packed and their spirits high, the two friends made their way to the action steel shooting range, eager to embark on the next phase of their shooting adventure. Arriving a few minutes late, Lisa and Violet joined the other students already seated around a couple of picnic tables, under a pavilion. The instructor, a young Air Force officer named John Wheeler, began their orientation. A seasoned marksman and longtime club member, Wheeler exuded authority and expertise. His passion for firearms was evident as he described the upcoming challenge and the importance of safety. To begin with, the instructor said to the group, "Around any outdoor shooting range, always wear eye protection at all times. As soon as you get out of your car, it is very important to be wearing eye protection." John stressed the importance of safety, and that the handling of any firearm had strict protocols and best management practices. Then he added, saying, "You don't want to be that guy, that person that people talk about, because you were unsafe and got hurt or injured somebody else." The steel shooting range itself, a simple but impressive feat of engineering that has gradually been refined over time. Tall towering dirt berms formed a protective barrier on three sides, while a fourth side, the open end, served as an entryway in the firing line. Today's design and layout provides a safe and challenging environment for firearm enthusiasts. The instructor continued to emphasize the critical importance of safety, detailing the specific procedures for loading, unloading, and the handling of firearms within the range. The sport of shooting steel, commonly known as the Steel Challenge, is a timed competition that has the objective of hitting five steel targets in the quickest time possible. If you miss a target, you keep shooting until all five targets are hit. A specialized electronic timer would add the element of competition, making it a timed and exciting contest. Holding up a steel plate to the group, the instructor introduced the 10-inch diameter round steel targets, emphasizing their role as stand-ins for human head-sized adversaries. The focus on accuracy and speed was made clear, as he outlined the competition's format, a challenging task, with some of the students worried about not being able to hit the steel plates at all. Violet knew everything about shooting steel, so she didn't need a lesson at all. What the instructor was saying was of no interest to her. She was much more interested in the handsome instructor himself, and that he had no apparent wedding ring. Not only was he really good-looking, he was strong and tough, and into guns. Just her type of guy. The targets, 5 10-inch diameter round steel plates, would be placed atop poles at varying distances and angles, challenging shooters to demonstrate speed, accuracy, and tactical strategy. The use of a timer would add the element of competition, a timed race, rewarding those who could combine skill with efficiency. The objective, hit all 5 targets, the fastest time wins. The prospect of Violet testing her skills against the clock, while targeting the steel plates, was especially exciting, because it had been a while since she last shot steel, something she had missed doing. With her trusty firearm, Goldie, securely holstered at her side, she was ready to embrace the challenge. As she moved among the other participants, her distinctive holstered weapon drew admiring glances, a testament to her potential skill as a marksman. Even her holster was well decorated. As the instructor called upon each participant to step up to the firing line, one at a time, a nervous sense of eagerness filled the air. One after another, the shooters struggled to meet the challenge, their best times hovering around the 8-second mark, with varying degrees of accuracy. For some of the least experienced shooters, times exceeded 20 seconds, with a lot of missed shots. The peer pressure was obviously strong, and the realization that they were competing against both the clock and their own limitations became evident. As the instructor looked for a next shooter to invite to the firing line, he saw Lisa standing behind Violet, comically pointing at her. The instructor smiled, then signaled Violet to come forward. Violet's turn had arrived, and as she approached the firing line, all eyes were drawn to her and her distinctive firearm that she carried. The custom gold plating gleamed in the sunlight, her style, a testament to her potential shooting skills. Now up close, John was captivated with how pretty she was, making him hesitate. "What's your name?" he asked. Pleased that he had asked, she simply replied with a sweet smile, "You can call me Violet." He looked at her gun and holster, commenting, "Well, Violet, that's quite a gun you have, and I see you have a speed holster. Have you shot steel before?" "It's a girl's gun," replied Violet, tilting her head slightly and looking deep into John's eyes. "I have shot steel a few times." She was trying her best to flirt with John, and it seemed to be working by the look on his face. John took another look at her gun, saying, "It looks like your gun started off as a Ruger, and it's a 9mm. Violet gave a nod with a smile, then he continued, "So far everyone out here has been shooting 22s. She replied, "Whenever I shoot, I train like it's for real. I want stopping power, and I wouldn't want to be caught in a gunfight, holding just a child's weapon." Violet's strong analogy raised John's eyebrow, and with a big smile he continued, "Okay, let's do this, shooter make ready." Violet took her shooting stance while the other students looked on, anxious to see if the girl with the fancy gun had something special. John proceeded, "Shooter ready?" Violet nodded. A moment later the timer beeped, starting its internal clock. With lightning-fast reflexes, and what seemed like a single motion with her arm, she engaged all 5 targets, dispatching them with just 5 shots. The crowd erupted in applause, their astonishment evident in all their faces. One guy yelled, "That was incredible." Lisa just smiled, because she was certain that Violet would do great. John looked at the digital display on the timer and his jaw dropped. "Whoa, 3.47 seconds. That was really amazing. I guess you have shot steel before." "Not too bad," Violet replied. "It's been a while since I shot steel. Let's go again." John got back into position behind Violet, saying, "Shooter make ready." Determined to improve on her initial success, Violet was eager to push her limits further. Her second attempt resulted in an even more impressive time. John held his timer in the air, yelling back to the other students, "2.14 seconds. Everybody was just in awe, a feat that elicited gasps of astonishment from all the onlookers. "I'm speeding up," Violet declared. "Let's go one more time." Once again, John got in position behind Violet, shooter make ready. When the start timer beeped, once again, Violet just seemed to wave her arm across the shooting range, and all the targets chimed in rapid succession when they were hit. Everybody was holding their applause waiting to hear the new time, but they knew it was going to be good. John looked at Violet with amazement. Then softly spoke, "I don't know what to say, other than, 1.98 seconds. Then he yelled the time to the others. "Hey everybody, 1.98 seconds. The crowd erupted in cheers, their admiration for Violet's skill reaching a fever pitch. Even John Wheeler, a man accustomed to exceptional marksmanship, was visibly stunned. Violet, flattered by the attention, smiled warmly, waving to everyone, then took a bow. They all had just witnessed a superstar performance by the new girl in town, and Lisa made sure that everyone knew that she was Violet's friend, and that she had brought her. "She's my friend," Lisa announced. Then she stretched the truth a bit. "I brought her here today because I knew everyone would be impressed." So, it was a good morning for Lisa too. John, clearly captivated by Violet's exceptional skills, extended an invitation. "I'd really like to get to know you better," he said, his voice filled with genuine interest. With puppy dog eyes he asked, "Would you like to grab something to eat after we finish here?" Violet, pleased by his attention, accepted his invitation. Her heart filled with a sense of excitement, because she also wanted to spend more time with John, and perhaps, she would have a date for this evening as well. John and Violet's lunch date was a resounding success, setting the stage for a romantic evening together in San Antonio's Riverwalk. A legendary and beloved oasis in the heart of the city, the Riverwalk was teeming with New Year's Eve activity. Couples strolled hand in hand, families shared joyful moments, and friends reunited. Everyone's faces, illuminated by the festive spirit. The constant flow of tour boats on the waterways, with their passengers captivated by the enchanting scenery, added to the lively ambiance. After a delicious shared dinner, John and Violet casually strolled along the romantic San Antonio Riverwalk. The anticipation of the impending New Year's Eve celebration added another layer of excitement to the already magical atmosphere. The city's iconic waterway, a labyrinth of canals, adorned with twinkling lights and lush greenery, was a breathtaking spectacle. A symphony of life and fun filled the air, a harmonious blend of laughter, music, and the gentle lapping of water against the riverbanks. John was fascinated by Violet's charm and intelligence, and he wished for a physical connection. The desire to take her hand was a constant temptation, but he hesitated, unsure of the appropriate moment to make his move. Violet, too, felt a magnetic pull towards John, her heart longing for the comfort of physical intimacy. This unspoken tension between them created a subtle energy, a silent dialogue filled with longing and hope. Finally, unable to resist his desires any longer, John halted in his tracks, and he looked into Violet's eyes. "May I hold your hand?" he asked, his voice filled with a mixture of respect and confidence. Violet's heart skipped as her wish was about to happen. With a radiant smile, she replied, "Yes, you may." As their fingers intertwined, a surge of electricity coursed through them, a testament to the growing connection between their souls. It was a feeling that could only be described as love at first touch. The world seemed to fade away as they continued their walk, their hearts filled with a sense of wonder and possibility. As they strolled along the vibrant Riverwalk, a captivating display caught John's attention. A vendor's booth, adorned with a dazzling array of illuminated headwear, beckoned them closer. "We should definitely get one of those hats," John suggested, his eyes sparkling with excitement. The couple had been admiring the festive attire of other revelers throughout the evening, and this was their chance to fully immerse themselves in the New Year's Eve spirit. Violet was also eager to embrace the festive atmosphere, suggesting, "Let's go take a look and see what he has." As they approached the vendor, they were greeted by a glittering spectacle of illuminated headwear. Trying on the various hats became a source of amusement and laughter as they experimented with different styles. "Look at me," Violet comically said, her face framed by a pair of oversized light-up glasses. John couldn't help but chuckle at her amusing appearance. "Check this out," he replied, donning a reggae-inspired headpiece, complete with an array of colorful lights and dreadlocks. "I love this," Violet declared, which raised John's eyebrows. As he watched her browsing through the festive headwear, he sensed their evening together was going amazingly well. Violet declared, "We definitely need something to complete our look." Then she spotted a collection of cowboy hats, and she immediately gravitated towards one. "Howdy, partner," she joked, trying on the hat with a playful grin. John really liked the Western-themed headwear and said, "Oh yeah, I like that one. I want one too," as he selected a matching cowboy hat. He added, "It's not too weird, and any Texan would be proud to wear it." The couple stood side by side, their newfound attire matched, and was a perfect complement to the festive atmosphere. As they continued their stroll along the riverwalk, they felt a surge of camaraderie with passers-by, their synchronized outfits, a testament to their shared spirit of fun and adventure. As the clock crept towards midnight, a sense of anticipation filled the air. Jean and Violet, eager to witness the fireworks spectacle, decided to escape the bustling crowds on the sidewalks and find a more secluded vantage point. A stone bridge arching over the canal seemed like the ideal escape. As they reached its center, a panoramic view of the river walk below unfolded before them. Glancing around, John declared, "Violet, this spot is absolutely perfect." His voice was filled with excitement. "We'll have a great view of the fireworks, and we're alone up here. Everyone else is crammed together down there along the sidewalks." He gently put his arm around her as they admired their view. Violet's breath shuddered with the touch of John's arm. As she smiled and her eyes sparkled, she commented with a soft and dreamy voice, "The river walk looks enchanting from this height, and we can see everything from here." The city lights, reflected in the glassy still waters below, created a shimmering tapestry. An unspoken understanding passed between them. They both knew the age-old tradition, a kiss at midnight, to usher in the new year. With a shared knowing look, Violet removed her hat and placed it gently on the bridge's stone wall. John followed suit, their movements slow and deliberate. As the seconds ticked away, the sound within the city began to intensify, and their possible first kiss was growing near. From below on the sidewalks, the crowd's countdown was underway. A rhythmic chant rose into the sky. 6, 5, 4. The city seemed to hold its breath while the final seconds ticked away. 3, 2, 1. The crowd cried out with a frenzied, "Happy New Year." The city exploded with cheers, horns blew, and then came the thunderous roar of fireworks overhead. The sky was quickly transformed into a canvas of blazing colors, a breathtaking spectacle that mirrored the emotions surging through John and Violet. In that magical moment, time seemed to stand still. John and Violet drew closer, their bodies trembling with a mixture of anticipation and exhilaration. And then, for a blessing that felt suspended in time, their lips met. It was a kiss filled with promise, a tender declaration of something profound. The fireworks continued to explode above them, a brilliant complement to the fireworks that were igniting within their hearts. In that magical instant, Violet felt a rush of emotion, a feeling she had never experienced before. John was much more than just a boyfriend, he was the missing piece to her heart's puzzle. She gave into this feeling with all her might, wishing that this perfect moment would never end. It was their very first kiss, a kiss, and a moment in time, that she would never forget. Returning to the present, sitting comfortably in his chair, Sam crunched contentedly on kettle corn, his eyes fixed on the dazzling Houston fireworks display. Violet, however, seemed absent in a world of her own. She just stared into the sky, lost in thought. Each burst of color and light ignited cheers and applause from the exhilarated crowd. Then, with a sudden change in the kind of rockets being launched, an extra loud and deafening barrage of rockets erupted overhead. Instead of the expected brilliant display, these rockets filled the night with thunderous booms that seemed to shake the ground. The abrupt, intense noise shattered the moment, jolting Violet from her daydream and bringing her abruptly back to the present, and then there was silence. Gradually, a final cheer rose from the crowd. The show was over. "All right, let's get out of here," Sam announced, a note of urgency in his voice. With that, both he and Violet sprang to their feet, hastily folding their chairs. The once packed crowd was beginning to disperse, a slow-moving tide of people finding their way into the parking areas. As they hurried towards the exit, Sam turned to Violet with a grin, saying, That was incredible, wasn't it? Violet, still adorned with her brightly lit headdress, replied with dreamy eyes, "You have no idea, it was truly spectacular." Thinking of her daydream, she added, "Even better than I had hoped for." Her eyes held a trace of contentment. She had been able to relive one of the most happy moments in her life, and at the same time, conquered her reluctance to celebrate New Year's Eve. Their plan was simple: escape the immediate crowds, walk 15 minutes, then hail a rideshare back to the hotel. Given the number of people attending the event, they anticipated a big surge in ride-sharing demand. Fortunately, their wait was relatively short, and soon they were en route to their accommodations. Back in her hotel room, Violet felt a growing concern about the safety of other events around the country that night. She turned on the television and began scanning the news channels, looking for any reports of terrorism. She felt a sense of relief as she confirmed the absence of any major incidents, at least between Texas and the East Coast. With a long sigh, signaling closure for a long day, she prepared for bed. As she slipped beneath the covers, her fingers found the familiar cool metal of John's necklace. Gently, she traced the Star of David pendant with her fingertip. "Thank you, John," she whispered softly. "I'll always love you. But I went out and played tonight, for the first time in a long time." She softly kissed the pendant, and then added, "By the way, I bought something tonight. An incredible light-up Indian headdress. If you saw it, I know you would be impressed with it." Then, with a pleased smile, she drifted off to sleep.